Welcome to the Old Fat Coach Podcast, featuring Russell Stutley, world leader pressure point fighting, national boxing coach, Cambodia. Prepare to get not only your martial arts boxing world rocked, but your whole world too.
Here we are. Hi, Brian. I'm absolutely honored by this because it's the man himself, Mr. Brian Jecks. For those who don't know, and you should know, Olympian, 10th Dan Judo, four times Superstars champion, absolutely famous in the UK for for the dips and the squat thrusts. I still remember them. And
four Olympic Games.
And the Olympic Games, yeah. I mean, four-time and the British champion, European champion, this champion. I mean, the list goes on and on. I think 10th Dan Judo.
Correct, yeah. You got it all right, don't worry.
And I actually met... Pardon?
It's all in the past. It's all in the past.
Yeah, but it's, everything is. Everything is. But... What I was really hoping to talk to you about was some of the physical and the mental training that you did to get ready for the Olympics, because that's a level that most people can only ever dream of. And just to get an idea of the mindset and the physicality behind getting ready for an Olympic Games. That would be a great...
As you know, I've been through four Olympics. The first one was in 1964. In Tokyo, and I was very lucky because the preparation for that games was that I lived in Tokyo for a year and a half before the games. Right. So I went there when I was 15 years old, and I stayed there till I was 16 and a half. Then I came back to England, got in the Olympic team, and then went back to Tokyo after that. So it was quite easy, really. I just trained in Japan for it, and that's the best place in the world. The second games was in Mexico, but judo was only an introductory game then because it was voted in Mexico. But the training for that was much more difficult because obviously, you've got to dedicate yourself to it. You've really got to dedicate to anything you do, as you know, with your boxing training. The dedication is not only just physically training, but it's also your mental attitude. You've got to be mentally correct. You've got to make sure that you are going to reach your goal. Your goal is to get to the games. You've got to make sure. And to do that, whilst you're training, that's part of your thought pattern all the time. I'm training because of getting to the Olympic Games and because of the people that I've got to beat to get there. They're the ones that are making me train, and they're the ones that are going to make me work even harder to get there. So I'm going to eliminate those people. So you have to keep all that in your mind. The third Olympic Games was in Germany, Munich. And for that Games, I had my father, who was also a very keen boxer, funny enough. Dad trained me for that. He made me run up a hill 1 in 4, which... Yeah. Took me at least 35 minutes to get to the top, and he'd stand at the top saying, I'd be thinking, you're making me run up this hill. He'd be saying to me, no, it's not me that's making you run up the hill, it's the people you've got to fight that are making you run up the hill. So you think about them all the time, and that will make you work harder. So, and then after all that, those Olympics, I went to the Superstars. Unfortunately, I'm a qualified PE teacher, so I know a bit about different sports. I asked my dad again to train me for the Superstars. And the first thing he said was, well, do 400 arm dips a day and 400 squat thrusts a day. And I said, hey, Dad, I've never done one, let alone 400. And he said, the first thing he said to me was, do you want me to train you? I said, yeah. He said, we'll do 400 arm dips and 400 squat thrusts every day. And he just walked away. And that was it. You know, it's your determination, isn't it, really?
It
gets you through. What else can I say?
Well, I remember seeing you doing the dips. And, you know, other people were breaking down at 28, 29. 34, whatever. People were saying, oh, they did well. And then they said, now it's Brian Jack's turn. 78, 80, 100. I think he did 100 on one of them.
Yeah, 101 in a minute, yeah.
Yeah, in 60 seconds. But, I mean, watching you, it's just like watching one of those, you don't remember the old, yeah, and the old adverts on TV and in with that bunny that was just ding, 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 ding. It was just like that. Just non-stop, and the squat thrust as well. I remember watching it, and there was I can't remember who it was. There was some other guy who did quite well. They did something like
Jody Schechter. He did the first one to do the sliding method.
Right.
And he did quite well on it. He did about, I think it was about 98 in a minute, but I did 118 in 1 minute. I tried to do one a second, but I just missed it.
Yeah, I mean, that was just nuts. I mean, I can't remember which one it was. I mean, because I'm 56, so I'm thinking it was 1981, maybe 80 from memory now. But you went on last to do your squat thrust because you poured some oil on the floor, as I recall. Is that right?
No, that was Jody Schechter who poured the oil on the floor.
Oh, was it? But right.
And then they were all up in arms about it. So what I did is I had a piece of material put on top of my shoe, which was frictionless. You could rub it on any surface and it would slide. And I did it like that. So I didn't use the oil.
Right, but I just remembered the oil, yeah.
That was Jody Schechter did that, definitely.
Right. The damn cheat.
But, you know, as far as people that are coming up and training concerned, you've just got to set your mind to doing it. Once you set your mind, that's it. You know, don't change your mind. Keep at it. Keep working and it'll come. You know, things will materialize.
It's what I say to my boxers is get fit once. And they don't understand what I mean. So if you do the hard work now and really get fit now, do it one time, get really fit, you've only got to maintain it.
I've got my friend here. I hope he's listening to you. Are you listening to this, big man? he is a very good friend of mine. We've been training together for the last 3 weeks. He started off 131 kilo. Yeah. And after 3 weeks, he's lost about 5 kilo already.
Fantastic.
So he's on the right road.
That's it. It's nice to hear things like that, isn't it?
That's really lovely. Yeah.
But I say with the guys, if I say to them, get fit now, do the hard work now, you've only got to maintain it. But if you keep in between fights and getting fat and lazy, you got to keep getting fit every time, and that's hard work.
Exactly.
Stay
fit for life.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm lucky now because I live here in Thailand, and the weather's always very nice, so I can't run anymore because of my back, you know, the injuries I've had with my back. But I've been cycling a lot, so we cycle every day, and I keep fit that way.
But the weather's the key, isn't it? I mean, I'm only down the road in Cambodia, so and it's got suddenly very hot here this week.
You can't beat the weather here, can you?
No. I mean,
eight of us went out this morning training, and it was lovely. We finished by 10, went out 8 o'clock in the morning, finished by 10 o'clock. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, I mean, with the COVID thing, the boxers weren't there today, so I'm on my own. So I've just gone down the gym, done my 15 rounds, thought, can't do 20, it's too hot. Come home, and that was it. Yeah.
You still try? How old are you?
56.
Well, it's lovely. You're still training harder.
Yes, every day. Yeah. Well, Monday to Friday, I train. I do me 15 to 20 rounds as hard as I can. If I can't do 20, I'll do 15 or whatever. And that's
hoping 20 years' time, when you're my age, you'll be doing the same thing.
I hope so. I never want to stop. That's the thing. That's the thing about martial arts. You never want to stop.
Well, if any of your listeners ever come this way, just tell them that I'm here. I run a big hotel. We've got 68 rooms, and It's called View D, and if they ever want to come and have a look, they're more than welcome. We'll look after them.
And we'll put a link to that on the thing, if that's okay as well, yeah?
I promise you, anyone that comes over, I'll look after them. It's not a problem.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, what a fountain of information they got right there if they want to ask a question. I mean, it's like, can't get back, can you? Now, I met a couple of people who were in the squad with you, actually, a few years back. Danny DaCosta.
Danny, little Danny, yeah.
Yeah, we did some teaching together because I was back over in England for a few weeks doing some teaching, and I met up with Danny, and we just got on like house on fire. So we did some teaching together at a couple of places, and he gave me some DVDs and that, and he was non-stop speaking about you.
See you later. Sorry, just saying goodbye to some of the guys here at the gym.
Yeah, no worries. He's just non-stop speaking about you.
Well, Danny was a lovely little man. Because you know he passed away.
Yeah.
Lovely man. I remember one story about Danny. We were at the European Championship in Madrid. And we were in the bull ring. You know, the big bull ring.
Yeah.
It was empty. But we just went. They took us there to have a look around the British team. And people were coming in to watch a bullfight. It was very early in the day, and there was a guy walking around with a little tray in front of him selling watches and stuff like that. Danny bought the whole lot off of him and went around selling the watches. He was so funny. He was up and down all the stairs. He was a lunatic, a great, great player and a great, great trainer. He trained very hard as well.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great sense of humour as well. We were just cracking up most of the time with stuff.
Lovely man.
Yeah. And it was just a great time, and we kept in touch, and obviously until he passed. And it was just the mindset again of people like yourselves attaining those levels is very different to most clubs.
He became European champion. He did very exceptionally well. He was a very great player, lightest man ever to win the Europeans from Great Britain.
Oh, really? I didn't know he was the lightest. No, I knew he was a lightweight, but I didn't know.
And he got a
seniors title as well, I seem to recall.
Yeah, he won the senior British European. He won the European Senior Championships as a lightweight. He was British champion. Yeah, he was a great player. Very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, it's so nice. And you know, for me, knowing of you from TV and things like that and the martial arts, my background was karate, Shotokan and stuff, and I did judo for a while in Denmark when I lived there, but only for 8 months and 9 months.
I also did karate in Japan with Oyama.
Oh, Masayama, yeah.
Oyama, he killed the bull. I was at his dojo practicing with him when I was 15.
Right, so you did Kyokushinkai there with him, yeah.
Kyokushinkai, yeah.
Yeah,
Second
down. Yeah. You got second down.
Got these little flies around at the moment.
Yeah, we haven't got anything like that here at the minute. I don't know why. They've all seemed to have...
You're lucky, there's loads.
Yeah, we're lucky over here. But yeah, Masayama's a legend, isn't he? I mean, I've heard the story, but I don't know...
I trained at his dojo for 2 years.
Yeah, that's the equivalent of 10 or 12 years anywhere else, isn't it?
I should think so, especially when it was winter, freezing cold, walking around the dojo. It was like walking on an ice skating rink. All these flies.
And being the foreigner there, you're going to be the one doing the tough work as well.
Yeah.
Especially back then.
Exactly. Yeah. Used to walk around the dojo with a big stick, whack you if you didn't perform well.
Yeah, you can't do that today.
It was the thing to do then, definitely.
Now, can I get onto some training stuff with you? Because
whatever you want. Yeah,
fantastic. Because I saw a clip with you talking about some of the judo players being too tense, and it really struck a chord because of the boxers that I work with, and. Try and say to them being loose. Now I knew what you meant by being loose, you know, so that you can you're still ready to go. You're not loose, weak. You're loose, but you've got the power there when you need it. But can, for people who don't understand what you mean about being loose, can you give them an idea?
Yeah, it's easy to explain. If you do something for the first time in life, like ride a bicycle, for instance, you're right tight and you're like this because you're worried and you're unsafe. But as soon as you learn to ride it a bit easier, you start to relax into it and your arms start to relax. It's exactly the same with any kind of boxing training, judo or anything. In the beginning, because you're not proficient at what you're doing, you tend to be really stiff. However, you're dead right. If you can learn to relax, once you relax, the movements seem to become much more fluid and much easier to do. And that's basically what it is. It's a lot of confidence, isn't it? You've got to be confident about what you're doing and just learn to breathe, relax, and take it easy and just move lightly, like Cassius Clay, you know, sting like a butterfly or like a bee, whatever he was on about. Yeah. He was ever so loose and moving around. And that's basically it. It's like riding a motorbike. The first time you ever do it, you're like this. And then once you relax into it, it becomes a pleasure to do. I think that, you know, it's very hard to do it, but once you've done it, it's very easy.
Yeah, and it's that you end up with that flow then, don't you? Where you're not, if you're too tense, you can be off balance too easy. If you can be loose with it, you can absorb and move and get around. Yeah. And the other thing that really struck a chord with me was you were talking about entering for a throw, and you mentioned it, that if somebody tried to do it in three steps to you, so like one step in, two turn, three start to throw, they're not going to get to two because you've swept them after one.
That's it.
And that really struck a chord with me, because everything we try to do in our stuff is to, if you've got something that takes four things, try and bring it down to three. And if it takes three, try and bring it down to two. If it takes two, try and bring it down to one.
You've got it in one. You've explained it perfectly. It's all about getting in with the minimum outlay of time and energy. Skill is the learned ability to bring about a predetermined action with the minimum outlay of time and energy. It's exactly what you're saying. You've got to do it as quick as you can, so the whole movement becomes in one, not one here, two there, three there, four. It's got to be woof. So it's a good thing to remember. Skill is the learned ability to bring about a predetermined action with a minimum outlay of time and energy. Exactly what you said.
But there was a clip I saw with you, and you were having somebody walk round.
Yeah.
And you were moving round, and then you were explaining to people that you don't,
once you got to a certain position, then you feel attacked.
Yeah, that your foot was there then, and he sort of almost ran into it rather than you try to, and then as his feet come together, his balance is really gone. If you get him at that point, you've got the sweet spot, so to speak.
It's the same as firing a gun or a rifle. You don't aim at the target if the target's moving. You aim just in front of the target. So it's a similar sort of thing. Wait till the person gets in. As he's going there, then you do your movement, your attack, or your hook, or your punch, or whatever it is. It's hard to explain over the phone, but
because you were talking also with people about patterns and how you used to find patterns on your opponents by watching them and noting it down. And would you mind explaining for people how you did that, how you worked somebody out?
Yeah, if you watch a boxer, you watch anybody that's in a combat sport, if you watch them for 5 minutes, you'll find three or four times in that 5 minutes, they have a certain movement pattern that they do. And they'll do it over again, then they might do it for a couple of minutes, then they'll do it again. But they always do the same pattern. So what you've got to do is identify the pattern and just be there just fractionally before he gets there. If you can understand what I mean. So if the person's moving in front of me this way, I know he's going to go that way. And then he might change that way. As soon as you feel him going this way, you get ready to go that way. So you spot his pattern of movement. That's the principle of it. Obviously, it's easier to explain on a mat or in the boxing ring, but that's the idea. Wait, don't attack. Don't shoot the gun too early. Don't attack too early because he would have moved out of the way. Basically, that's it. It's a very simple thing. It's not rocket science, is it?
No, but that understanding of seeing a pattern, recognizing the pattern, being ready for the pattern, and then attacking the pattern is not as easy to do as it sounds, is it?
Boxing's a typical example, isn't it? Because boxers they go over and over the same thing. They do it a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I think you've just got to identify what they're doing and be there just a bit quicker than them.
Yeah, I mean, it's that simple. I tell my guys, give them a pattern and then take it away. It's like giving them a present and taking it away. You give them a pattern, knowing that they're going to come for that pattern, and then the next time you're not doing it. It might take two or three to give them a pattern, and then you hopefully they'll go for it. And it's the same thing. As understanding their patterns, you've got to play the game of giving them a false pattern as well and things like that. And
yeah, it's like a game of chess, isn't it, on the mat or in the ring?
Yeah, yeah, with blood and bruises. But, I mean, you finish most of your fights very, very quickly.
Out of 100 fights, I've probably finished 75 of them within the first minute.
Yeah, I mean, which is an incredible record, right?
But the other 25% of the, you know, he may be on the mat for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, it's, you know, 20 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, but that gives people an idea of just how difficult it is to finish them that quick.
Yeah, but do you know why that came about? When I first started judo, I was about 8 years old, and my father had already been doing it for a year. And he was a taxi driver. And he came to the mum and the kid, you know, me and my sister, and said, I'm in a competition at the Royal Albert Hall. So we went along to watch, and it was the London cab drivers versus the Metropolitan Police. Right. And my dad was only 5'8", and the guy that he fought was 6'1", and he looked like a giant compared to him. So the 10 taxi drivers came out, the 10 police came out on the mat. I'd never seen judo before. And my dad was the first to fight. They came out, they sat down, bowed, stood up. The referee called the first two out, which my dad and this big, tall policeman. Because in those days, you had to be 6 foot to be a policeman. Yeah. And the referee said, begin. They took hold. He moved three steps to one way, and my dad swept the guy's feet away. He fell flat on his back. The referee called point, and that was it. It was ended. Three seconds, it was finished. I spent the rest of my judo career trying to beat somebody in under 3 seconds. I've never done it.
Right, got you.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true.
That's a great story, isn't it? That is really great.
It was what we talked about earlier. It was a pattern of movement that he knew what he was doing. You know, he just got there before the other guy.
Yeah, I mean, but to have that stick in your mind as well and be the goal going forward at that young age tells something about your mindset, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, during all the fights I've had, I mean, I can send you some pictures of, you can see in the background the clock starts at 10 minutes and it's 9 minutes, 58 seconds or 56 seconds and the contest is over.
Yeah, that's just missed it.
You get a much longer rest that way.
Well, you don't get paid overtime, as we say in boxing. But to give people an idea, that's the equivalent, really, of knocking everybody out in the first round, including the count in the first minute. It really is equivalent. And to get a knockout is hard work.
You can knock them out in the first 15 seconds, it's even better. You get a longer
Exactly. But, I mean, that's how difficult it is. And we're talking at super high levels as well, aren't we? We're not talking at, you know, at local club level, these fights. We're talking at British, European, world, Olympic level fighting. I mean, it's because there's levels and levels. And again, it's something that a lot of people don't understand, that there's massive difference between Olympic level and club level and county level and area level.
But what you're listening to must remember is that you've got to put in the work to get to that level. You've really got to put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, I mean, an incredible amount. I mean, how many hours a day were you training just on the physical side of things to get ready for the Olympics and for Superstars?
For the Superstars, a lot more than the Olympics, because in the Superstars, there's 10 different events.
Yeah.
Cycling, swimming, canoeing, weightlifting, gym tests, and so on. You know, so you have to do a little bit of each every day.
Right.
So the period of time for Superstars was a lot longer, but not so strenuous as judo. Judo was fitness training in the morning, technique training in the afternoon, and actual sparring in the evening, what you would class as sparring.
Yeah.
So it would be about, in all, 6 hours a day.
That's a lot, isn't it? That's a lot.
It's got to be a lot, isn't it? You know, the more you sweat in training, the less you sweat on the day.
Yeah, that's true. So true. So true. I mean, again, for people, that gives people an idea of levels, because you're doing, say, 6 hours a day training. Most people are lucky to do 4 hours a week. You know, they go to the club twice a week or something like that. That's why there's these levels, not only just the skill, but the amount of work that goes in, and hard work as well. A lot of people don't realize just how much hard work goes in.
No pain, no gain.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I mean, you see, I hear it all the time as well. They're just skilled. Yeah, they're just really skillful. Yeah, but they are doing like 30 odd hours a week of this.
Yeah.
That does help. But I mean, out of all the things that you've done, you know, if we just look at the Superstars one for a moment, which one was the one that you're sort of like most fond of, remember the most, or most proud of, whichever way around? Yes.
Sporting, man, or just...
Yeah, just on the Superstars one. We'll come to the judo one after. Or, well, you can do both. Superstars and judo.
Well, I don't know. It's just winning, isn't it? You've got...
Yeah.
You know, you're in it to win it, aren't you? That's the way I looked at it. I don't think I enjoyed doing one thing more than another, but the Superstars, for instance, gave me a new lease of life after doing judo, because I was in the British judo team for, like, just on 20 years. And then when I stopped doing judo, I went into the Superstars, and it was a new lease of life. I was 33 when I went into it. So, you know, I weren't young. It was just that doing different sports other than doing judo, so the training was all different. It was much more exciting because you know, basketball, for instance, I was never any good at basketball. I had to learn how to do it quickly. You know, there's loads of things that I had to learn. So it was much, I think the Superstars was more fun.
Yeah.
I mean, rowing, for instance, I never got beaten in the rowing boat.
No.
No, because I went and had proper lessons and learned from the best person in Britain at the time. Cycling, I never got beaten in cycling. Although it wasn't a long race, but I went and learned about the bike, not only about how to train on the bike, but how to set the bike up, which other people didn't do. You know, they didn't look at it from a professional point of view.
Yeah, yeah.
I do.
We always got the impression that you really knew what you were doing when we were watching Superstars. It was that you just said it there, professional. Some people weren't as professional in their approach.
Well, no, I mean, you imagine that you've got eight people going to race each other on a bike. They supply the bikes. They just got on the bike and cycled it. I made sure that, you know, exactly where the seat. I had all the measurements written down on a bit of paper. And I had my dad there beside me sorting it all out, you know. So it was, and the shoes for the squat thrust, and the angle that you're on the bar when you do the arm dips. I didn't hang up vertical. I was on the bar at that angle because you get more thrust from your legs. And the squat thrust, for instance, most people did it on the flat of their hand on the, you know, on, like on the table like that. But I did it with my fingers up here.
Right.
So it made me 2 or 3 inches higher so that I could bring my knees through quicker and more room to bring your knees through. All those little things are so important. And when you train and when you, you know, you're getting fit for an event, they're the things you have to think about. It's very important. I mean, just for instance, the squat thrust, to do it with on your fingers like that, you see that, instead of your hand flat, brings you up 3 inches higher. 3 inches higher means your legs can come through much easier. You don't scrape the floor so much. And there's less drag and so on. I mean, it's just all just tiny little things that are important.
But it's that analysing like that, that analytical brain, that way of looking at it, is that something that you've had anyway or that you got from your judo? Because I know from your judo, you've been marking down on a gi where people grab and how they move so that you can combat it when you come up against them.
Okay. Well, when I first went to Japan, I came across a judo person there. He's since died, just recently died. His name is Watanabe. He could do everything on the left-hand side as well as he could do it on the right-hand side. So anything he could do on the right, he could do on the left just as easy. And I couldn't make that out when I first went there because I was only ever taught on the right-hand side. No one ever taught me how to do anything on the left-hand side. But when I saw him doing it, then I started to practice it myself. I realized that I was only doing half of my own sport because I was only doing it on the right-hand side. So think about boxing. If you're a southpaw, right?
Yeah.
Why not as well?
Yeah.
So you learn both sides of it.
So I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
I don't know if that analysis sounds right to you, but it's the same in the superstars. As soon as I saw like the rowing for instance, or canoeing was more, give you a better example.
Yeah.
When you can, I saw them putting the oar in so quickly into the water. Boom, 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 boom. And I thought, well, they're doing so much work, they're not getting anywhere. And when I went and had a lesson, the guy said, the further you reach forward with the oar, the more water you can pull back.
Yeah.
He said, if you dig the oar in by the side of the boat, by the time you dug it in, the boat's gone. So you're only pushing a little bit. So all those little things are very, very important. They're all about how skill works, you know. Listen, I'm not being rude, but I'm going to have to go because I've got somebody waiting for me. And if you want to talk again, there's no problem. Anytime you want to do it, it'd be lovely.
That'd be fantastic. Right. Again, thank you so much. It's been an absolute privilege for me. Thank you again. And
anytime you want to do it, it's no problem at all. All right?
Great.
Lovely.
Thank you very much.
If anybody comes over here, tell them to come and see me.
We will. Thank you very much. See you. Well, bye-bye. Well. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys and gals. Remember to tell everyone to join in next time to the Old Fat Coach.